The reality was I could not handle sitting by myself, because when I sat by myself, I had to sit with me and all the lies that were spoken over me when I was a child, and all the lies that I held on to from my childhood, they would come in and I would have to deal with them.
From Crossroads Media, this is See Hear Love with Melinda Esterbrooks, Season 10, Episode Number 23.
Well, welcome back to See, Hear, Love, and what a show we have for you today. So excited that we have Tori Hope Peterson in our podcast studio in Burlington, Ontario, Canada, for all of you who are listening around the world. Tori, welcome to our studio and to Burlington, Canada.
You're so sweet. Thank you for having me.
First of all, earrings are stunning. Outfit is on point. Love this whole vibe and look. I love it. You're right in with what I love. And as we approach spring and summer, perfect.
Thank you. I like to wear all the color. I think it's like more joyful, you know?
It is.
Yeah. I love the color.
I love it. So thank you so much for being here. And to you listeners and viewers who'll be watching on YouTube, this is really special. Tori was on our show years ago, I think during the pandemic, for like a short little segment about family. So when I heard from your publicist and from our team at 100 Huntley Street saying you're here in the building, it was like, no brainer. You've got to be on the show. Because you have so much wisdom and good things to share. So first of all, let me introduce you. And then I want to get right into your story and then talk about some really, really important things that you have a lot to say about, and I know will bring encouragement and hope to so many. So let me brag about you, gush on you with some of our friends. And this is something I learned, like, is it send you roses, give you roses, something?
Give you flowers.
Give you flowers. Oh, my goodness. I was close. Okay. Yeah. My kids and all the people are going to be like, okay, Mel, you're so out of touch. But I've tried.
I got you.
Give you flowers. You. Thank you, Tori. Okay. Not roses, not tulips, flowers. Okay. Tori Hope Peterson. I grew up in an unpredictable, dysfunctional, and abusive environment, moving through more than 12 foster homes before she turned 18. Now Tori is a sought-after national speaker, best-selling author, Bible teacher, and host of the I Love You Already podcast, and she is a lover of people. Tori inspires other women, moms, and children with painful pasts to overcome, I love this, adversity and change the world. Also, she's written a new book called Breaking the Patterns That Break You, Healing from the Pain of Your Past and Finding, this is amazing, real hope that lasts. Do you know that rhymes too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you like okay, that? Okay. That was
I was literally going,
I did that.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I did that.
I was like, past and finding real hope that lasts. I love that. I was like, that's
Thank
good.
You.
Welcome again, and wow. Okay, so let's get in right into your story. I mean, I did a little intro about it, but as much as you want, but I think it's really important to set this foundation of who you are and your lived experience and where you've come from as we then dive into the breaking, the patterns that break you.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm 29 now, but a lot of the things that I talk about did start from my childhood. And so I first went into the foster care system when I was 4 years old, and that was due to a drug bust. A SWAT team busted through our front door and a caseworker swooped me out, took me to my backyard, and then drove me to my first foster home. And then after that, I was actually reunified with my mom, my family of origin. But then there was a lot of dysfunction. My mom struggled with mental health a lot. And I do always want to say, like, my mom did the absolute best with what she had. But my mom had experienced a lot of trauma, a lot of abuse herself. And I think there wasn't as many resources, you know, as there are now. And so, unfortunately, she passed on that trauma and she passed on those generational curses. And I went into the foster care system again when I was 12 years old with my biological sister. And after the first home, we were separated from each other, moved throughout 12 different foster homes throughout my entire time in care, which, you know, when you do that, when you're moving from home to home to home, it feels like, you know, I felt like nobody wanted me, and I felt very unloved and very unwanted. And then I aged out the day I turned 18.
Wow. And when you say aged out, what does that mean? Like, are you going somewhere? Do you have the resources, the tools, the emotional, mental, physical, spiritual ability to go on your own?
Great question. So say 20 years ago, what that meant was typically that children, youth, who were turning 18, young adults, were usually kicked out of the foster care system because they had turned 18. They were quote-unquote adults. I wouldn't qualify an 18-year-old as an adult.
Yeah.
Young adult. And so now, like, I aged out. It's been 11 years ago now. And when I aged out, I actually chose to. And that's okay. More of what youth are doing now. They're typically not kicked out because America has, they want to make the foster care system better. And mm-hmm. so in doing that, they have created extended foster care. So typically youth, young adults can actually stay in foster care until the age of 26 in most states in America. But many choose to leave, emancipate, age out because they feel usually they feel pretty burned by the system. That's how mm-hmm. I felt. I felt burned by the system. And I just didn't want to be a part of it anymore.
Wow. When you talk about 12 foster homes, I can't imagine what that would do to a young girl, because home represents safety, a place to come to, warmth, food, care, love, family. So when I hear 12, I think about for you trying to form who you are and what that is, and talk about that, because I can't imagine that. I can't imagine going from one home to another, and what that would do to your heart and soul.
Yeah. I remember when I would move, the feeling was like, okay, this is going to be the one. Like, I always got excited at first. I'm like, this is going to be the one. And I would try to just kind of shape shift, be a chameleon and make myself however they wanted me to be. And I think whenever I started to get like comfortable, or when things started to kind of settle in, then it felt like something happened where I would have to move, and then I'd start all over again. Okay, this is the one, and I'm going to be whatever they want me to be. And then the disruption would happen and I'd move again. And that affected me a lot into my adulthood, because it was like conditioned in me to be like everybody else, be like the people you are around, be like them, and then that will make you loved. Then that'll make you acceptable or able to belong.
I'm nodding because I resonate. When I came to Canada, I was 13 and a young brown Filipino woman. And I didn't feel, and in real cases, I wasn't accepted. So I shapeshifted. Mm-hmm. I became a chameleon to be accepted. I decided that meant I needed to be what people wanted me to be.
Yeah.
Now you're 29 and I'm older than that. And what have we learned through that? What, Tori, have you then said? Because it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. Being a chameleon and shapeshifting is exhausting. And at one point you're like, who the heck am I? Like, if I'm shape-shifting into all these things, at some point you're like, which person do I need to go into that party with or that room in? And there have been times where I was confused. I'm like, oh, which Melinda?
Yeah.
So talk about that, because exhausting, and how have you worked through that to then say, no, I'm actually Tori and this is who I am. When I go into a room, when I go in to speak, when I come to a podcast studio, I'm fully choosing to be fully me.
Yeah. I think I learned that when I do that, I get invited into a lot of places that I actually don't belong and that I don't want to be in the first place.
Huh.
Because I'm trying to be someone else, right? So then that someone else gets invited into these places that like actually Tori to the core doesn't want to be, that I don't belong, whether if it's a justice issue or a systemic issue or a character issue or a faith, issue mm-hmm. of faith. I think I've experienced too the real beauty of when I am, who I feel like God has created me to be. So in June of this past year, June 2024, I had this amazing opportunity. It was like one of the greatest honors of my life. I was invited to testify to Congress, to the Ways and Means Committee, on how to improve outcomes for vulnerable children in America.
Wow.
It was amazing. There was only four people who were chosen to testify, and it was amazing. It was like
I'm getting chills. I'm literally getting chills.
It really was like one of the most incredible experiences of my life. It was like a 6-hour hearing. Congressmen and congresswomen asked us questions literally for like 5-6 hours, and we had to answer the questions on the fly. But I talked about how, you know, I'm in this government, very secular environment. And I talked about how it is the church's responsibility to pick up the mantle for vulnerable children in our nation, and how it is the Lord that has brought me to where I am. And after that, I was very nervous to do that, but also I was just giving the true answers, like the answers that were true for my life. And that's what I was asked to do. And you could tell, you know, there were people who shut down. There were people who maybe put their nose up. But afterwards, there were so many people, too, who said, I've never heard God talked about like that in this environment. That was so inspirational. And, you know, I think I've experienced – that was probably, like, the biggest, you know, moment. That's, like, the biggest example. But I think experiencing that even in little ways over and over and over again is what gave me the bravery to then do it in a setting like that. And so I think after experiencing again and again and again, when I show up as God has created me to be and not as who the world wants me to be, it's like you get the results that God wants, right? And it's you have peace, and you just like feel you grow in confidence, I guess, to continue to walk that out. But it's been a journey of just continuing to have to do it, to have to be brave over and over again.
It's so good. You know, I talked to a lot of women, like, being brave isn't always easy. Most of the time it's not easy. And also I think as I've in my life and as I've gotten older, I've realized that I do what God's called me to do. And even though I have those people-pleasing tendencies, I have to be like, I'm not managing your emotions. I'm not managing how you think of me, because that's exhausting. And you can literally spiral out and never live a full, liberated life if you're always thinking, oh, that person wants me to be that. Or I have to like change how I speak or do it so that they're appeased and they feel good about themselves. It's not easy, and it's really hard, and I'm still having to work on that every day.
And it's so fun when you just, like, get to be who God's created you to be. Like, it's just so fun. Like, when I get to be Tori, I'm like, wow, I'm a ball. Like, let's keep doing this.
For sure. And I think, but that's it. And that's when I you know, and I know you've experienced this too, Tori, and for me, like, when you are that, and then you meet with other women or other people, and you come fully yourself, it actually gives other people permission to do the same.
Yes,
I've seen that when like, come in as myself, people are like, oh, I can be that too. And I'm like, hey, if God's called me to that, then I'm just going to do that. And listen, I mean, I offend people. There's so many places I've offended people. My gender, my cultural identity, all of the things, my leadership as a woman, all of those things. And yet I hear God say, great. Just go do what you need to do, what I've called you to do, and just do it and do it well and do it with joy and love and go for it. And so I love hearing that. And congratulations. That's big to talk in front of. Is it like Congress?
Yeah, it was like all Congress people.
Way to go. Way to go.
Thank you.
So it makes sense to me, Tori. So you've written this book, Breaking the Patterns That Break You, Healing from the Pain of Your Past and Finding Real Hope That Lasts. Again, love that little. It makes sense for you to be writing something like this and hearing about a little bit about your past. And so I want to talk about this. There's a couple questions in line with that that I think I'm wanting to learn from you. Because, again, people are like, oh, Mel, you've arrived and here you are. It's like, no, every day I wake up and it's a choice to come fully as myself, to break these patterns. So I want to talk about negative patterns that hold us back. Because I find that when I go and speak at women's groups, that's a big one. Like, women are stuck because they are still stuck in these negative patterns of behavior, of in their mind, who they believe they are. And so how did you personally move from that, heal from those patterns? I think it's just more of like helping women as they're listening to take the first step.
Yeah. Well, patterns, the way that they tend to work is they function in our lives. They're very much under the surface. They're subtle, they're quiet. And that's typically because it's what we've always known and it's what we're used to, whether it's passed down through generations or some other reason. And so in my own life, I was actually, I've been in therapy since I was 12 years old. Actually, I had a judge who mandated that he knew the trauma that I had went through as a child, and he mandated that I attend therapy.
Okay.
And then when I became an adult, my husband and I actually attended, it was just like a trauma seminar. We went to go listen to the speaker, and he said that those who grew up in dysfunction are much more likely to enter into dysfunctional relationships.
Mm.
And that just struck me because my whole life had been dysfunctional relationships. You know, it started with my family of origin where there was a lot of abuse and neglect. Then when I was a young adult, when I was a teen, I would struggle a lot with promiscuous relationships, mm-hmm. getting into dysfunctional relationships with boys. And then I got married and I was like, okay, like this pattern's just done. Like it's going to be over. But then we were in the church and there was this church woman that I really latched onto, and I wanted her to be like a mother figure in my life, and I wanted her to see me as a daughter. And when I looked at our relationship more clearly, what I realized is that it reflected a lot of the relationship with my biological mom.
Oh.
And so what I know now is that if we do not heal the trauma, it'll transfer.
Mm.
And the psychology says that happens because these patterns, we fall into them because it's where our brains find comfort. You know, it's where it feels like home. It's like I said, it's like what we've always known. And so I think, you know, when we have these broken relationships again and again and again, or when we feel like we're in dysfunction again and again and again, or these feelings of turmoil again and again and again, I think we have to kind of pause and start to take inventory and ask ourselves, why is this happening? Mm. What are the patterns here?
Hi, I'm Addison Espilla, one of the content producers here at See Hear Love. I just wanted to take a moment to invite you to join our community called the See Hear Lovelies. Here's how. Number one, sign up to our weekly newsletter. Every week, you'll get a personal note from Melinda with links to our shows, blogs, and resources, as well as inspirational content and a short devotional. You'll also be the first to know about upcoming events and giveaways. QR code is in the show description, or sign up through our website at SeeHearLove.com and look for the newsletter icon. Number two, join us in studio and be part of our studio audience. Take a behind-the-scenes tour in our master control room, editing suites, and studio. You'll meet Melinda and the See Hear Love co-hosts and guests. Email us at seehearlove@crossroads.ca for more info. And finally, number three, become a monthly partner. $25 or $50 a month will help us share our brave themes and conversations on television, here on podcast, YouTube, video streaming, and on our social media platforms. We can't do See Hear Love without donations and sponsorships, so please go to www.seehearlove.com/donate and give your one-time or monthly donation today. Become a See Hear Lovely and join our See Hear Love community of belonging, vulnerable and brave conversations. We are here for you.
Yeah, as you're saying this, my brain is going, okay, I'm thinking like my own patterns and just different things, because there's so much of family of origin.
Yes.
There's so much. And again, you reflect a lot of like when I was feeling like I was not enough, that I wanted the adoration and connection. So again, I was promiscuous. I total prodigal. And for those who don't know that, it was like I literally went away from my faith and was just like, I'm just going to be destructive because I didn't like who I was. Drinking, drugs, boys, for years, just to numb and to escape me. And yet I remember too, in my 20s, 30s, and even in my first marriage, those patterns started coming up. There's things that were like in my head saying these things to me. And so, I've been in therapy too. And I think that's really, really important. So when you have decided, okay, I'm seeing cycles, destructive patterns of behavior, what is the next thing you do? So I'm sitting here, I'm like, yep, Tori, I hear you. I know that it's there. I'm seeing it in my life. How do I, is it stop? Is it pivot? Is it, what's my next step?
Yeah, I think having people around you that are willing to, I don't like to use the term call you out, but like call you up, right? Out of
patterns. That's good.
I think that's a real gift. So there was this one Christmas, my husband and I, we were organizing a bunch of different gifts for just people that we love, family members, community members. And the nicest gift in the pile was this leather bag, and I put it in that church woman's pile. And we kind of had sticky notes with everybody's name on it, so I put it in her pile. And my husband was like, you don't give any nice gifts to your family. Like, that should go to your mother figure, who's, like, literally been in your life since you were in the seventh grade, who's loved you. And I was very offended. I was like, I give nice gifts to my family. But, you know, when I looked at it all laid out, what I realized is that I give a lot of nice things and I embellish and love those who don't accept me and don't love me. And then I kind of reject the people who do love me. I chase after those who don't accept me and I run away from those who do accept me. And that pattern, when I recognized that pattern in my life, I think that began to kind of spur on healing, because what it did was it moved me towards the people who loved me, who were willing to call me up, like my husband did, out of these patterns, but still love me through them. Mm-hmm. And we all need those people, right, who are willing to stick with us even when we're learning, even when we're difficult, because what it shows us is the truth that we really are lovable, and that we really are worthy of connection and being with people.
And that's really special. I mean, to have a husband that will call you up. I am remarried and Chris is exactly that, like, calls me up all the time. Sometimes I'm like, hun, maybe, too much. Maybe not today. Maybe Friday. And he's like, but he's always like, you know, like, kind of like, you know, framing it as like, but it's love and I love you. And I love him, but it's good, because for someone who has been so free and can do what I want and make decisions, it's been great to have someone call me up. I like that. It's like, I think that's a good thing for people to say, who are the people that will call you up? And maybe it's time for people to do like a little inventory. Like, if you don't have those people, maybe that's a problem. Maybe you're having too many yes people in your life that are actually ones that are not, that are actually not loving and helping you. They're just like, you know, keeping you in that cycle of bad patterns for whatever reason.
And is that a narrative you tell yourself? So for me, like, the narrative was, I don't have anybody. Nobody loves me. But really, I had a whole group of people who loved and accepted me. I had just pushed them away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, ask yourself, is the narratives that telling myself, that I'm speaking over myself, is that a true story? And is it may have been true. Like, it was true at one point. That's why I kept speaking it, because it was true when I was in foster care, but I kept speaking it. And I think at one point it was true that I was a victim, but then as life went on, I was victimizing myself and I had to recognize that.
You know what? I wonder how many people are victimizing themselves. You know what? This is what I'm saying. As I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh, all these like truths, and they're hard. Like, I'm like, yes, I'm making notes, but it's like hard to hear. But the hard to hear, if it's connecting, like it's connecting with me and I know other people who are listening, then that's the kind of cue and clue to say, maybe I need to like dig into that.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to like be very intentional about focusing in on like, why is that making me like either uncomfortable or go.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
And I say this to a lot of women. It's like, Mel, I want a great life, a life of freedom, promise, opportunity and potential. And I'm like, but what are you doing about it?
And I loved what you said about, like, if there was a time in your life where you said you were trying to escape you. Mm-hmm. That is the thing that you said. I was like, I can relate to that too. Because there were times when I was trying to take inventory, or when I felt like the Lord was kind of opening a door. He was even presenting to me like, Tori, this is a pattern, or like, you need to take inventory. But I was too uncomfortable. And so what I did to kind of like reject that was, I was always trying to be with people. Like, I was always, and like in the church, that's a beautiful thing, right? We're supposed to live in community. And I would kind of like cover up my dysfunction with like the quote unquote good churchy thing. And so I was living in community and I would call people, you know, I'd be on long drives by myself. I'd call people. If I was on a flight, I would make sure I got the Wi-Fi to scroll and message people. When I was eating by myself, I would FaceTime someone, you know, because the reality was, I could not handle sitting by myself, because when I sat by myself, I had to sit with me and all the lies that were spoken over me when I was a child, and all the lies that I held on to from my childhood, they would come in and I would have to deal with them. And the Lord was trying, what he was trying to do was, he was trying to get me to sit with him.
Good.
But I felt so uncomfortable in that I just couldn't. And in the end, I think it was this. I wish I could say like I was just so holy and I made the decision to do that. But really, I think it was just so much, you know, this mm-hmm. work, you're traveling by yourself, you're yes. eating by yourself. And after so much time, you do have to like you are forced to sit with God. You are forced to sit alone. And I think there was this holy kind of loneliness that led me Ooh. To I had to open my Bible if I didn't want to hear and be plagued and overwhelmed with the lies. I had to turn on worship music to not like be drowned in the pain. And so when I was sitting with God, what happened was then I heard the truth of what God said about me.
You actually were able to finally the noises out and you could listen.
Yeah, I think I was going to people. It was again, I was going to these people. I couldn't be alone because I was looking for their validation.
Yeah.
I was looking for them to tell me who I was. And then when I sat alone with God, I heard his truth and I could start to hear what he said about me. And I could start to hear who he was calling me to be.
You know, in your book, you talk about this idea of inviting Jesus into your pain. And I love that because it seems a little counterintuitive, like bringing Jesus into my pain, like I don't want to go to Jesus. I'm going to go to myself or to others to deal with my pain, to soothe me, to help me, to speak kind and loving words, like a soothing balm over me. But you talk about Jesus in your pain. And you've said, you know, some of the things, but, you know, for some people, like, honestly, what do you mean? Like, yeah. does that really help? Does he really help? What does that look like? Because yeah. it feels very tactile what I'm feeling, and I don't know if Jesus can actually help in that.
Yeah, I think that's a really real question. And I think that I have struggled with that question.
Mm-hmm.
And this inviting Jesus into our pain, it really came from, so when I was a kid, I lived in a trailer park, and I still live in the town that I grew up in. Which is, yeah, it is, exactly. It is really interesting
yes.
experience because the life that I get to live now is very different than the life I grew up with. And so I lived in a trailer park when I was a child, and this trailer park is kind of, it's the most impoverished place in our town, probably, if not one of the most impoverished places. And it has a lot of just a bad rep, like the way that people view it and the way that people look at it, they call the people, I remember as a kid being called trailer trash. And it's just the way that the town and the community speaks about the trailer park is quite harsh. And so then I'm an adult now, and I went to a prayer meeting at my church, and I was, you know, we were just praying. We kind of took turns praying. My pastor started praying. And he was like, we just pray for what is going on in the trailer park. And I just like actually just like interrupted the prayer. And I was like, wait, what's going on in the trailer park? And he said, their water has been shut off.
Oh.
And it was like, so what happens in developing countries is happening like 5 minutes away from us, like across town. And I was like, okay, so like what are people, what's being done about it? And like nobody knew. And so I called the mayor and the mayor's office, and I was like, what can we do? Like, can we bring them clean water? Can we pay for them to have porta potties? Like, what do you need? Because I knew that the town, I felt that the town probably wasn't doing much because people didn't love them. You know, people didn't care for the people there. And I just remember being a kid, and I thought, I couldn't imagine being there now as a kid. Everyone's saying all the things they always say about the trailer park, and I can't even take a shower, and then I have to go to school the next day. I can't even drink water, and then I have to go to school the next day. And the mayor was like, he gave me he didn't really have any answers for me, but he gave me the phone number to the trailer park manager, and I got on the phone with her, and I was like, what can we do? And there was just no part of her that wanted to talk to me. She was like, yeah, we'll get it fixed. And I was like, no, I'm not like a city official. Like, I'm just need to know what we can do to help you. And there, she just didn't want to talk to me. And so she was trying to rush to get off the phone. And I was like, okay, before you go, can I just tell you that? When I was a kid, I lived in that trailer park. I know the things that people say about you. I know the things that people said about me as a kid. And I don't say those things. Like, I love you. And I want to help you because I remember what it was like. And it's hard. And you could just feel, like, over the phone, the wall just crumbled. And she had tears in her eyes. Like, you could just hear, like, you know, the tears in her throat. And She was like, we really need clean water. Like, we need clean drinking water. Can you bring us just like water and cups? And I was like, yeah, we can do that. But, and I say this story not because like I'm the hero of the story, but I say this story because if we want to help those who are hurting, we often have to acknowledge the places that we were hurt. And wow. that trailer park, that's where I lived before I went into the foster care system. That's where a lot of the worst abuse that I've ever went through happened to me. And I don't really like, you know, when I'm in my town, I don't always like to bring it up. I like where I live. I like my life now. And it's hard to acknowledge all of those things when it's right there. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't, then I wouldn't have had the opportunity to see how God redeemed that entire story.
That is, okay, Tori, that is powerful. It that message, because our human condition and tendency is to not deal with the bad, the experience, to walk away from it, leave it behind. And what I'm hearing you say is, for us to make the difference, for our own healing, for others to heal, we actually need to remember, to bring back, to speak into those hard places that we were.
Yeah, I think to see the full redemption of the story.
And it is redemption.
We have to go to the pain of the story. And we usually just want the redemption and the happy ending without going back to the painful part. We have to go back to the pain. We have to invite God into it for him to redeem it.
And the problem is we are so pain adverse. Like, our society is like, guilty. We don't want to be in pain.
Same.
I don't like pain in any way. Physical pain, needles, you know, anything. I don't want to be in pain, like working out. Ah, it's painful. Like, we are so pain adverse. Yeah. And yet, over and over, what I'm hearing you say and the things I've learned, you need to face the pain, sit in the pain for us then to be, I think, to become fully human, fully alive, fully connected, and to bring healing for ourselves and others. Beautiful. In that as well, I mean, your book is so full of these things. So as just a short interruption, get the book. Like, get the book right now. Get the book. You know, because I could talk to you for hours. But this idea, and you've said it, but it's worth embracing your brokenness. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sucks. I mean, nobody wants to embrace their brokenness. And it feels daunting. It's overwhelming. But like we just said, it's worth it. And in a way, it's like, it must be done.
Yeah, it must be done. Yeah. And I think that when we ignore it and when we push it down, we miss out on like the beauty of our brokenness. When I think about, you know, really my entire life, it feels like even now, like I'm here and people get to hear me on a podcast, but there's still brokenness, you know, in the midst of life. And oftentimes when it comes to healing, it feels like 5 steps forward, 2 steps back. This journey of healing, you know, it hasn't been linear. When I share on a podcast, it sounds like, you know, when I share in my books, it does sound like it's the story that's linear and that goes from point A to point B to point C. But I try to communicate also in my book that healing is not linear, you know, that there's mountain peaks, but there's also really dark valleys. And, you know, you go kind of back and forth within them. And I think the really healing part is when we accept that. Because for so long what I was trying to do is say, once I get to this point, then I'll be healed.
Right.
And that was like bondage. It felt like, you know, it just felt like so constraining to healing, because when I did experience healing, it was always not enough, not good enough. And that goes back to the lies that were spoken over me when I was a child. That goes back to the lies that hinder us from healing in the first place. But when we, you know, accept the journey that this is gonna look like some days 5 steps forward, 2 steps back. Mm-hmm. It's gonna some days look like a valley, but God is gonna bring us out of that. It's not the end of the story. Accepting the journey, I think, is part of deeper healing.
So good. And creating new healthy patterns. I think people who are listening are like, yep, so I know I have brokenness. I know what I'm listening to Tori and Melinda, and I realize I might have to go back to the past and acknowledge things and not. Because I think, you know, if I can just say this, you know, talking to my girlfriends, there are girlfriends of mine who identified trauma and things and worked really hard. And it's been a long journey to get where they are. I have other girlfriends who do not want to acknowledge the past because it's too painful. And to go there, they believe that it will break them. And so they are in a different place in their journey. And so, you know, as I'm thinking of my friends, I'm thinking about myself. It's, you know, what you're saying. And in the book, it's so powerful because I, from your experience, you know, the work that you've had to do, I think it's the work. Mm-hmm. Like if you want liberation and freedom, if you want to not be like taken out and stuck, you've got to identify and then you've got to make these really difficult choices and then choose healthy patterns. Yeah. Healthy patterns, talk about that. Talk to me about it because I'm always like, I got to get to the gym. I have all of these great plans, story for my life, and don't always follow through on some of those things because it's hard.
Yeah.
And it takes, you know, repetition or it takes the choice or to get off the couch. And so how does one start? Like, in very simple, because sometimes it gets overwhelming when there's too many things. But how would you say, we're ready, we're identified, I want to be free, I'm ready for healthy patterns. What would you say?
When you say do the work, the first thing that comes to mind is responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we have to take responsibility.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, a lot of times people who've experienced trauma, they, like I said, they were victims. The things that happened to them were things that happened to them. But then along the way, the things, you know, that happened to them are now things that they engage in. It's dependencies or patterns. And so we aren't responsible for, you know, the pain that was that someone else did to us. We are not responsible for, you know, the abuse that was caused in our lives. That's not our fault. But we are responsible for the healing moving forward and how we engage in it and, you know, what we do with that pain. And so I think the first step is really taking responsibility and asking ourselves, what part might I play in this, you know, and how has this affected me to maybe have dependencies or patterns that are now hurtful for myself? What I realized is that I really struggled with codependency, and how I would define that is a very unhealthy dependency on people rather than a healthy dependency on God. And so what I did was I put people in the place that I should have put God, and I would look to people to tell me who I was, to validate me, to affirm me, when really we should be looking to God, you know, for that. And I had to take responsibility, and I had to say, okay, I have all of these relationships that are crumbling underneath me because I'm putting the weight of God on people. I am expecting people to be God, and nobody can can be under that pressure and be healthy in a relationship. And that was really hard because what I labeled it as was love. I'm just loving people. I'm just being in a relationship. I'm just being in community. And so, again, we have to go back to those things that maybe we label and ask ourselves, am I really doing what I say I'm doing?
It's good. Tori, your book, what's your hope for your book, Breaking the Patterns That Break You? What's your hope for those that buy it, as they read it? What do you want to come out of the reading?
Yeah, my deep hope is that people come to know God more. Mm-hmm. And by coming to know God more, they come to know who he has created them to be. So the first lie, there's 14 lies throughout the entire book. Every chapter is a lie. And the first lie, I believe, is a foundational lie. Mm-hmm. And that is that self-love is selfish. And I started there because for a long time, I really struggled with self-hatred, and I thought it was humility. And I had a mentor, her name is Danielle, and she knew that I was struggling with self-hatred, and she looked at me and she said, humility is simply agreeing with who God says you are, nothing more and nothing less. And I thought that I needed to make myself less, almost to the point of like getting rid of myself. When I was in the foster care system, in my file, you know, I had all these labels. I was the trouble kid. I was the bad kid. And so my deep belief was that I was bad. And when I went to Genesis, what it said is that God looked at everything that he made and he called it good.
Yes.
And so what the truth that I can take from that now is that God did a good job making me. And that God loves me and he doesn't want me to hate his creation. He wants me to love his creation. He wants me to love who he has created me to be. And I think when we begin to embrace who God has called us to be, you know, we begin to not just have like this human confidence, but this confidence in God that allows us to just walk out the calling that he has on our lives. And in turn, we see more of him. We grow in intimacy with him. And so that's my hope that people take away from the book.
I love that. And you said there's 14 lies throughout the book. And I think, you know, at least one and probably more, the reader will be able to relate because we have, you know, and as I've said, like talking to girlfriends and speaking around, most of the time when women come and talk to me, they're living under lies that they believe is true. And it's untangling, identifying and saying, no, this is who God says you are. A lot of the work, Tori, I do is just saying, this is who God says you are. This is God, who God says you are. This is who God says you are. This is who God says you are, right? It's like more of that than anything else. Yeah. So grateful for you. Where can we pick up this book? Where can we find more of you, hear from you, be with you, hang out with you? How do we get the book?
Yeah, you can follow me at Tori Hope Peterson. Peterson is S-E-N, not S-O-N. You're going to go type it in. You're going to be able to find me. It's because my last name is S-E-N. It's spelled wrong. that's my husband's fault.
Yeah.
He gave me that last name. And you can buy the book anywhere books are sold. You know, anywhere. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you get your books. And come hang out with me in rural Ohio. I love cooking for people.
Okay, I won't give out your address, your personal address. Because I was like, that was weird. And I was like, hang out with you. Like, and everyone's like,
come join me. I love having people over. We got room for you.
Awesome. Tori Hope Peterson, what a joy. And I have to say this, like woman to woman, sister to sister, so proud of you.
Thank you.
You know, your life could have been very different to be here with me to talk about the story. Like, it's like supernatural, miraculous, amazing, incredible. And it's the story of you and God. I always say this. It's like, it's not my story. It's our story. It's God and my story together. Yeah. And I will say, you know, as I journal and pray, you know, I had to do the hard work. I knew that God was always with me. And I knew, though, I had to do the hard work in it. It wasn't like I had to sit there and go, okay, God, do your thing. And then I'm going to change instantaneously. It was, no, I had to do some really hard things, work really hard on identifying, you know, the past things. And so really proud of you. I'm so, so grateful for your voice and presence in the world, Tori. It was an honor and privilege to have you in the studio to hear your story. And make sure everyone, Tori Hope Peterson, pick up her new book, Breaking the Patterns That Break You, Healing from the Pain of Your Past and Finding Real Hope. That last, I'm sorry, every time I'm like, that laughs. I just have a little jig every time. I'm like, I feel like Adam and Addison, the producers, have to put music every time I say behind. So it feels like a little song. But thank you so much for being with us. And to you, our listener and viewers, always know that you are seen, you are heard, and you are deeply loved by God. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining See, Hear, Love with Melinda Esterbrooks. This podcast is a Crossroads Media production. We're grateful for our sponsors, Tyndale University and the Canadian Bible Society. Until next time, always remember, you are seen, you are heard, and you are loved by God.